Yeah, thank you for giving us the award, and we are really honored to receive it. But at the same time, I'm now feeling a little bit of pressure to present this paper. So anyway, thank you for coming to my talk. This talk is about a reverse debugging system for failures in deployed software. This is a joint work with Wei Dong and Ben from Microsoft Research, Barish and Upermanu from University of Michigan, Ruo Yu from ASU, and Insu from Georgia Tech. So let's jump right into the problem. Suppose you are a developer. You write a bunch of code, and you ship it to your customer. Unfortunately, not all bugs can be caught prior to software release. So inevitably, some program may crash in the field. As a result, a call dump will be generated and sent back to your company, which will be finally routed to yourself. And by looking at this dump, a common question you ask is, what actually happened before the program crashed? This is essentially asking you to play the role of a detective, trying to figure out who the criminal is based on the final C. This is a non-trivial task, and you may find some clues here and there, but it's not easy. So one possible solution towards this problem is why not just pre-install a camera so that it can capture everything that has happened? Applying this idea to the software world, this is essentially a record and a replay system. At runtime, the record and the replay system will capture the entire execution of the program running. When the program failed, the developer could then replay the execution trace in both backward and forward direction to pinpoint the actual condition leading to this bug. However, one key requirement in deploying such an approach in practice is that it cannot incur a noticeable performance overhead. Otherwise, users are not willing to pay the performance overhead for a real event, like a program crash. So to meet this requirement, we created a reverse debugging solution called Repeat. Repeat stands for reverse execution with a processor trace. It has two steps. At runtime, it will use a hardware tracing, such as an Intel processor trace, to log the control flow and the timing information of the program execution. So existing hardware features like Intel processor trace can achieve this with very low performance overhead, like roughly 1 to 5% overhead for majority of workloads. However, one caveat of existing hardware tracing is that it doesn't log any data. So we invented a binary analysis technique trying to recover the data flow from the control flow. This idea sounds pretty neat, but how do we actually do it? Throughout the rest of the talk, I will tell you how Repeat can recover the data for both a single-threaded program and a multi-threaded program. Let's first look at how Repeat handles single-thread execution. Here's the problem. Given a call dump and its preceding instruction sequence, how do we recover the program state at each point in the history? This is a non-trivial task because, by nature, program execution constantly overwrites its previous state. So the question is, how do we recover those overwritten states? I will show you our algorithm with a very simple example. This simple program contains five instructions recorded in the trace. The first instruction loads the effective address of a global variable G into a register RBX. Then it changes the RX to be 1. Then it will add G's value onto RX. In the next step, it will write the result back to the global variable stored in the memory. Finally, it will clear out the RBX value to be 0. Suppose this is the final state captured in the call dump. The first thing we try to do is we try to reversely execute each instruction in the trace. This XOR instruction clears out RBX value, so we cannot really reversely execute it. So we simply mark RBX value before this instruction to be unknown. Here's the interesting place. The move instruction moves the value in RX into a memory location pointed by RBX. But now we don't have the RBX value. So here we choose not to do anything but move on. Note that this might introduce some error. In this example, we know that RBX actually pointed to the global variable G. So here, G contains a wrong value because we incorrectly propagate G's value after the memory write to its previous state. I will show you how we do the error detection and correction later in this example. But for now, just keep in mind that G contains the incorrect value. So here, for this add instruction, we don't have the value of RBX, so we cannot really reversely execute it. We simply mark RX value to be unknown, and then we move on until we hit the beginning of the trace. You can see that there are many values that cannot be recovered by solely doing the backward execution. So our trick here is we combine backward execution with forward execution. For example, after this LEA instruction, because it loads a constant address to RBX, so we know after that instruction, RBX must have the value of G's address. Similarly, after this move instruction, we know that RX must be equal to 1. Here's the interesting place. Now we have the RX value. We have the RBX as well as the memory value pointed by RBX. So we can add them up. But now we have a conflict. If we add 1, 2, 3, we got 4. This is an inconsistency with the value that we recovered in the previous backward execution. We know the reason is caused by having a wrong value in G, but repeat doesn't know that. And what repeat does is it will check which value is more trustworthy. Here, RX equal to 3 after this add instruction is actually directly from the dump, so it cannot be wrong. So here, repeat will simply discard this update and move on. Here's another interesting point. Previously, we don't have the RBX value at the backward execution. Now we finally know that this is a memory write to a global variable G. So repeat will perform error correction on that by marking G's value before this instruction to be unknown. Then it moves on to the end of the trace. Then we will turn to another backward execution. Let's keep going. Here's the interesting place. Now we have the RX value both before and after this add instruction. So we can use this information to infer the value of G, which must be 2. Then we carry the information all the way to the trace beginning. Then we'll do another forward execution. In this iteration, there's not much interesting things happening except that we recover G's value here by propagating its value from its previous state. Then we move on to the trace end. To this point, we conclude that repeat has recovered all the values it can recover, and we just stop here. From this very simple example, we can see there are two key techniques used in repeat to recover the execution for a single-threaded program. First is it combines the backward execution with forward execution and runs them iteratively to recover the states before irreversible instruction like XOR. Second, when repeat sees a memory write without knowing its actual address, instead of marking all the possible memory locations to be unknown, it will just keep using possibly correct values and rely on error correction to handle the errors introduced by so-called missing memory writes. Okay, after we know how we handle single-thread execution, let's look at how we do the multi-thread execution. The problem is similar. We still have a single call dump. But instead of one instruction sequence, now we have multiple instruction sequences. This is a hard problem. And existing recall and replay system either doesn't handle concurrency, or they incur non-trivial performance overhead. The key challenge here is how do we determine the exact thread interleavings when multiple threads are running on multiple processors? In repeat, we leverage the timestamps generated by the hardware tracing. In this example, we have two instruction sequences running on two CPUs. And the first thing we do is we divide the instruction sequence into subsequences so that each subsequence has a starting timestamp and a finishing timestamp. In this example, we can tell that subsequence E actually happens before subsequence B because E finishes before B even starts. However, we cannot tell the order between B and F because they are essentially executing in parallel. The next thing we do is we merge those subsequences into one single instruction sequence. And for the subsequences, we cannot tell the order solely based on timestamp. We just choose an arbitrary order. The key insight here is that the order only matters when there are concurrent memory writes to the same memory location. And I'll show you how we handle that. Suppose there is a memory write from E to a variable, which is subsequently read if by an instruction in subsequence B. Here is that we can see that E happens before B. So we can just propagate the value from E to B, just like how we did for a single thread execution. Suppose we have another memory write from B and a memory write from F to the same memory location. They write it with different values. Then let's say there is a memory read from C to the same memory same variable. What do we do? Shall we pass 18? Shall we pass 20? Because here we don't really know the order between B and F. So we choose to restrict the usage of the memory values here and passing unknown to an instruction C in the subsequence to the instruction in the C. Here we can see that we use two key techniques to reconstruct the execution for multi-threaded execution. The first is we leverage the hardware, the fine-grained hardware timestamps to construct the partial order for all instruction sequences running all CPUs. Then we recognize that concurrent memory write will affect the data recovery. So we constrain their usage when we detect concurrent memory writes and whose order cannot be solely determined by the timestamp. We constrain their usage to avoid propagating a wrong value. Next, with repeat, let's see what we realize the following scenario. This is actually a deployed scenario now inside Microsoft. Now the developer could just request history information for a particular failure. He says, oh, I want history information for this particular callup. And the error reporting service running in Microsoft will turn on tracing on opt-in user's machine for that particular program. Know that Microsoft will never turn on tracing on random people's machine without their consent. It's not going to happen for privacy reasons. Suppose the program crashed again. A call dump will be generated just like before. But this time, the call dump will contain the PT trace. And the call dump will be sent back to the developer. Now let me show you what a developer can do with this PT trace enriched call dump. I'll show you a demo. So this, okay, now you can see the screen, good. So this is a call dump loaded in the Windows debugger. This call dump is captured from a program called PBZip2. PBZip2 is a parallel compression and decompression utility program. Here is a crash that happened in one of its worker threads. You can see this crash happened in the fifth thread on the thread list. And this is the only difference between this dump and the traditional call dump is that it contains a PT trace as one stream inside this call dump. And if you look at the program crashed in this statement, in the highlighted statement. And if you pay attention to the value in the critical section, this is a variable, you will see that, this pointer actually contains the wrong value. So as a developer, the next thing you ask is, where is the bad pointer coming from? So by looking at the source code, we will see that, this critical section variable is actually coming from the caller. It's a parameter. So we can just go back in the trace to the caller. The caller is just a simple wrapper. And then we can just keep going to the next caller. Here's the interesting place. This bad pointer is coming from a field of an object called FIFO. And if you look at the value of FIFO, it seems to have been corrupted already. So who corrupts it? To answer this question, we can set a watch point or memory breakpoint on this object. So what we do is we set a memory breakpoint on this FIFO object. Then we just go back in the trace to figure out where is the last write to this object. And we go back. You can see that this is in an assembly function, and if we dump the call stack, it's an instruction in the memset function, which is a which is called in a destructor. And if we go to this stack frame, you can see this is actually in the destructor of this object. And so this indicates that this is potentially a use after free bug. And if you look at where the free happens, it is actually happening on a different thread. So this is a use after free bug caused by race condition. And if you look at the regis values at this moment, repeat happens to recover all the regis values here, but even though in general, repeat doesn't guarantee to recover all the possible values. And if we look at where we are in the trace, we are already more than 10,000 instructions back from the failure point. So without repeat, it's really hard to figure out what happened, who corrupts that object. But with repeat, it becomes obvious. Let me go back to the... Okay, let me give you a quick summary of our evaluation. We evaluated repeat on 16 bugs, including integer overflow, memory corruption, race condition, and so on. At runtime, repeat incurs roughly 1 to 5% overhead thanks to Intel processor trace. Repeat enables effective reverse debugging for 14 of them. And we also compare repeat with a precise but slow software-based record and replay system to measure the accuracy. And we find that repeat can achieve actually very high accuracy, over 90% for the bugs that we evaluated. If you are interested in more details, such as for which two bugs that we cannot handle, please refer to our paper for more details. To conclude, debugging production failure is important, but at the same time, it is also very hard. And repeat is the first practical reverse debugging solution for production failures. It has two insights. First, it minimizes the runtime overhead by only using hardware tracing to log the control flow and timing information. Then, it relies on binary analysis to recover the data flow from the control flow and the call dump with very high accuracy. Finally, repeat has already been deployed on Microsoft Windows ecosystem. With that, I'm happy to take any question you might have. Thank you very much.
Hi, that was very interesting. Thanks.
I
had a quick question. You mentioned that the way you interleave or check for thread interleavings is by using the timestamps on the cores.
Yeah.
But the timestamps, as far as I'm aware, are not synchronized fully across cores. They're not perfectly synchronized. Does that mean that you will occasionally reconstruct the incorrect execution?
Oh, that's a good question. So actually, on the CPUs that support Intel processor trace, or most recent CPUs, Intel supports a feature called invariant TSC. So basically, it guarantees that timestamp counters on different CPU cores within a single socket is guaranteed to be synchronized. So we don't have the issue you mentioned.
Okay, but that's only within a single socket.
Within a single socket. But across socket, Windows kernel has some software-based mechanism to synchronize the timestamp counters across CPU cores on different sockets.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hello. Henry Ching from Stanford University. I also had a question about the timestamps used for synchronizing threads.
Yeah.
How do you handle out-of-order execution, i.e. your timestamp is being read before your operation actually completes?
Oh, that's a good question. Yes, so we use timestamps as a rough order to construct the single instruction sequence. So out-of-order is definitely possible, but for now we just rely on timestamp to have a rough order, and we run the single thread data flow recovery on a single sequence. So does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Wen Qiu from RISE. Very interesting talk. Since you are tracing the execution history of deployed software, so my question is, will it cause any privacy problem? What if the users doesn't want to report their state so that you can trace their execution history?
Yeah, that's a good question. So at Microsoft, so we put users' privacy as a very top priority. So we only turn on tracing
quite funny.
So we only turn on tracing on opt-in user's machine, and we never turn on tracing if the user doesn't opt in.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Xunyang.